So today we're talking to Wael Iskander. He's an Egyptian writer who's been living in Berlin. We wanted to talk to him to understand a bit more of what's happening in Germany. As probably everyone knows, there's been a crackdown on a lot of pro-Palestinian, or basically what sounds like all pro-Palestinian marches, demonstrations, and ideas. And so we wanted to hear from him about what that's been like. So welcome, Wael. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's all good. Thanks. Nice to be here with you and speak about this, which I have experienced up close and personal. So happy to share my thoughts around that.
Before we get into like any analysis of what you think it all means, can you just give us a rundown of what exactly has been going on for people who are not following?
I want to contextualize a little bit more what's been happening in Germany over the past few years. Germany in particular has a really huge problem of not allowing anything against Israel to be said or expressed in any way, despite the large communities of Arab-speaking people that are there, either from Syrians, Egyptians, or Palestinians. But if we backtrack to nearly over a year ago, in Berlin in particular, all the Nakba protests were banned. And this is kind of a very dangerous precedent. They decided to ban all these protests. And so anyone who appeared to have any kind of Palestinian ornament or flag or kufiya, they were accused of participating in illegal protests. This is something actually that I was caught up with myself. And then I wrote a piece about it called Ice Cream with German Police, because it was such an absurd situation. But ever since, I was kind of acquitted from that kind of case. But what we've seen is an escalation of targeting of Palestinians, or particularly the support of Israel in the name of fighting anti-Semitism. And what has that has translated into banning the protests, very violently attacking any of the protesters who expressed solidarity with Palestine or an objection to the, you know, continuous airstrikes that have been propagated by Israel. So that's kind of where we are now.
But is it worse this time than in the past? Like what has it been like when you've gone to the protests?
So it is much worse in so many different ways. So first of all, most of the protests are banned. But in the few ones that have taken place, the police were extremely, extremely violent. And there are a lot of videos of young children being violently arrested by police just for wearing a kufiya. A few of my friends have been arrested, and one of them has been beaten just for refusing to kind of move slightly or something. But other people, without any provocation, the police have been pushing them and shoving them, and it's kind of very, very hard, difficult to understand this violence. But in the midst of the crackdown, Olaf Scholz has been expressing his support for Israel. So it seems that they are equating pro-Palestinians with anti-Semitism, and that's why the aggression is very, very escalated. It's very heightened, and it's actually ridiculous. It's actually very ridiculous. So some protests have been actually last Saturday. I mean, there has been a great big protest, and a large number of people showed up, and not just Arabs, there's a lot of Europeans, and it was a solidarity protest. It was marketed as anti-colonialism, which it really is, but you could see that even Germany is kind of questioning its own basic rights of protests as we come to, particularly to the question of Palestine.
Are there pro-Israel demonstrations going on at the same time?
No, we don't have that kind of anti-protest at the moment. There's mostly people that are objecting to ethnic cleansing and genocide, and this is how they're framing it. But there has been a lot of a few details. For example, everything is branded as anti-Semitic. The German media will always brand these protests and will cover them in a very kind of biased way and brand them as glorifying violence or so on. One of the chants that people have used for a long time is "From the river to the sea, Palestine will will be free, was deemed anti-Semitic by Germany, and so it's not allowed in protests. And you can see a lot of like this kind of media manipulation of spreading a lot of misinformation around what has happened. Of course, most Germans here believe that there are 40 decapitated babies. They believe that Israel is just targeting Hamas, that Israel did not target the hospital. And you know, all of these things, the media does not make an effort to correct itself when a rumor is spread. And so for Germans, for the most part, cannot deal with it. And it's actually one of the most difficult conversations you can have. In Germany, it's impossible to talk about Palestine because even people who are more to the left, they're split between their support of with Israel and their support of Palestine. So it becomes a very, very difficult conversation to have, and it's actually zero tolerance. And for me, it reminds me of authoritarian countries where people can kind of like have to shut up about a certain topic, and this is exactly what Germany is enforcing at the moment.
Do you think Germany is more aggressive towards pro-Palestine demonstrations than other European countries? And if so, why do you think that?
I think Germany is a lot more antagonistic towards pro-Palestinian demonstrators than other countries, for certain. I think on a government level, most countries are pro-Israel. But when you're applying it, it's the discrepancy between how they deal with protests and pro-Palestinian protests is not so huge. Like, for example, France is generally very violent about protests. But in Germany, it's quite different. And it comes from the entire state of things in Germany. So in Germany, there are a lot of, in the media, in Deutsche Welle, if anyone, even before these protests, if anyone is making a pro-Palestinian comment, they can lose their jobs. Around 7 journalists from Deutsche Welle have been fired already. And that kind of, they kind of terrorize people into not speaking about the matter. I think there's something institutionally problematic for people. They get canceled very quickly, just as soon as they start criticizing Israel. And it's all done in the name of fighting anti-Semitism. And more recently, they have been cracking down on Jews who are against the occupation. So, for example, the most recent example is a Jewish person was fired from the Jewish Museum, you know, to combat anti-Semitism, which is really, really crazy. But what I want to say about this situation is that Germany, even the government that claims to fight anti-Semitism, is largely anti-Semitic. It's actually, if you think about it, they don't really fire people in Germany in government who are anti-Semitic. They actually allow them to continue. Although the new Nazi groups are not cracked down on in a similar way, we have a rise of the extreme right, but they are using this, anti-Israeli crackdown, you crack down on anyone who is against Israel, as an alternative to cracking down on real anti-Semitism. So on a government level, a lot of them are actually anti-Semitic, and you know, there are a lot of debates around this, and Ilan Papi has clearly expressed it, is that you can't equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, because in Zionism is a recent political movement and not a form of racism as it is being described. So you have that kind of situation where the accusations of anti-Semitism are weaponized, and they are the form that is kind of eliminate any kind of conversation around Palestine, and there's no platform at all to speak about it. So it is extremely oppressive over there.
That's crazy. I mean, I hadn't thought about that before, but so you're saying that the crackdown or like the pushback against neo-Nazis in Germany currently is less than the pushback against people who are just pro-Palestine. So in the name of anti-Semitism. So why do you think that is?
I think there's a lot of interest between Germany and Israel. I've been thinking about this today. It's kind of bewildering on like just how much vehemence you find from Scholz like standing up for Israel. But if you think about it, there is no strategic advantage to any country to stand with Palestine. There is no economic interest. There is nothing that you gain. While as with Israel, there are a lot of economic ties, and there are so many things that happen behind the scenes that make it advantageous for any country actually to have relations with Israel. And we've seen this even in the Arab world, right? In Saudi Arabia, UAE, Egypt from a long time back, they have very good relations because there is an incentive there. Even if the incentive is to just buy surveillance equipment to follow your dissidents or so on. So in that sense, that strong connection there, is advantageous. And at the same time, the AfD, which is a very right-wing party, is probably number three in the polls, and they are rising to power, and they're doing much better in elections. And most of the real anti-Semitic attacks have come from the far right, which are not monitored greatly. A couple of years back, we saw like a lot of police or intelligence people involved in right wing conspiracies, and they kind of rooted them out. So I would say that it's just a matter of economics at the moment, but shrouded in really, really good PR and really kind of capitalizing on the shame and the guilt that Germans feel for both going after for the Holocaust, but also for losing the war, I would say. So that there's a lot of shame that I think this is where it comes from, and they're capitalizing on it from a, kind of mass manipulation kind of perspective.
I mean, do you think part of it is just that there's been such an influx of like the Arab community or like Arabs into Germany in recent years, and so they're not used to seeing these types of protests, and they just have no idea what the hell they should be doing with this because they usually would want to just stay out of it because of all that guilt that you're talking about? Or is that oversimplifying?
It's very difficult to say how this is working. I've attended a lot of pro-Palestinian protests, and they were allowed, and I would say it's difficult to understand the psychology of it, except more and more people are being confronted with this idea that you can't really do both, right? You can't really support Israel without oppressing Palestinians, and then they're faced with this choice that is becoming clear, and Israel is making it abundantly clear that you do not accept it. I mean, I think this moment in particular as well is an interesting moment because inherently people are valuing Israeli lives more than they are valuing Palestinians. And no matter what we see about the rhetoric of equality, it's all tokenized. It's all good as long as you know your place. And I think the attack shocked them is that Israel there with all of its technology, it has been bypassed, and then some very horrific things were happening now to Israelis, and that is unacceptable because they are the first world, and you could see very, very clearly actually across the world that as Palestinians were dehumanized and called human animals, no one stood up for that. If this were happening to Ukrainians or someone else where Russia is the aggressor, you would have found a very huge backlash from the community is, no, we believe in equality, human beings, but you could see very clearly, it's happened even in front of the British Minister of Foreign Affairs, that his Israeli counterpart dehumanized Palestinians, and he said nothing. And it's just kind of the tacit approval of these kind of things. But if you want to support Israel, you have to kind of clamp down on all of these protesters. And even you can see even institutions like FU, which is a free university in Berlin, they've openly expressed their support for Israel, and they have not expressed support for the thousands of children that have been kind of killed by Israeli bombardment.
How bad is it? Like, if someone comes out and just says that, like, free Palestine or something on their profile, or they're applying for a job, or they're in a position at the university, are people just being fired? How bad is the response right now?
The response is as bad as the institutions are and how close they are to the German government. So if you are a university professor and you've expressed your views very openly, it's most likely that if you're not tenured, you might lose your job. It's kind of McCarthyism at the moment. And people who have these open views can be expelled. I know that, for example, some universities might expel students with Arab names. I've heard this if they show solidarity and support against what Israel is doing. So this is kind of a way of censorship that relates to livelihood, the livelihood of people. These are real examples, by the way. I'm not just hypothetical. It's been told to me by people close, but I would not ever advertise that because they might actually lose their jobs. And it is a climate of fear that even common sense and humanity can be punished by these institutions.
I know across or in some European countries, there has been a tendency towards like more fascist policies, you know, and like, I just hear from friends who live in Europe, it's not the same anymore. They don't feel like they have the same kind of freedom, like even outside of this Palestine, recent Palestine crisis. So, but you say that in Germany was different, and that protests have been just fine until this happened.
So when I say fine, I'm also comparing it against the Egyptian model, which means you're not going to be shot and killed. You're not going to languish in jail for 2-3 years. But that doesn't mean everything is great. From earlier, one thing, you know, a lot of people might not know is that German police cannot be held accountable for any violence they commit against people. In general, whether it's in protest or somewhere else. And the reason is that a policeman's testimony is worth more than any other civilian. And also, whenever they are giving testimony to courts, what happens is that many of them have the same testimony. It's kind of like a brotherhood, as you would expect, and the court hears more. So, for example, if you were beaten by the German police, and even if there's video evidence of that, and you submit a complaint, you probably would not win it. But what they actually do is they submit a counter complaint, and they usually win it. So you could end up paying a fine, even if you were beaten. And there are a lot of examples in terms of this kind of police violence. So the police does act with impunity. It's just not advertised as much. And depending on the state in Germany, it could be very racially driven or just based on orders. So it's really impossible to hold them accountable. But having said that, they don't do that as a matter of course for every protest or every issue. They are mostly racially driven in the cases of violence, and topic driven. And so I wouldn't expect any way that you can counter this kind of operation. But from in terms of freedom to express yourself, most of the things go except when it comes to anything that relates to Israel. And now it's even worse. So I would say it's Berlin is a little bit of an interesting place, because it's a lot like Cairo and how dysfunctional it is, but it actually functions a little bit. So it's a bit chaotic. So it's a nice place to be, with a lot of communities, and depending on the neighborhoods, you would find you know, a lot of people to talk to. But now, in the area where Arabs live most, which is Neukölln and a place called Zonenallee Street, there is a huge presence of police that harass people on a very, very regular basis. And that is a development. And maybe also interesting for you to know that it's this support is kind of like really institutional. But for example, in a school, a teacher punched a student for wearing the Palestinian kufaya. And actually, when the student tried to defend themselves, you know, the school stood with the teacher, you know, with this assault on the student. So this just gives you a sense of how institutionally biased when it comes to this particular thing. But at the end of the day, I would have to say that I think that Germans do consider Arabs human animals for real. It's something like in Germany, a lot of people complain about the fireworks that happen in New Year's Eve because it disrupts their pets, their dogs, and they're very, very concerned about this. But I don't think anyone is concerned about the bombs that terrify kids and actually kill them. And that to me is a reflection of the racism. And that's why I don't think that showing pictures of dead Palestinian children does anything. The problem isn't that they don't know that this is happening. The problem is that they don't value this loss of life. They don't see Palestinians as equal people. They only think about, you know, the people that died in the rave party because it reflects them. They identify more with this kind of thing. And that is exactly the problem. And they've stopped all kinds of conversation that can even allow people to think of Arabs or Palestinians as human. They're only great as long as they're not in direct opposition to the policies that are in place that Germany supports. And that is the sad truth that, you know, we are the human animals and we have to kind of deal with that.
You said you've been back and forth between Cairo and Berlin the past few years. Have you personally encountered any incidents where you felt like Germans were racist? Like, have you encountered an example of this racism that you talk about?
Yeah, I've encountered it. Like I said, last year when I was going through little square and holding my bike, I was just passing through and I found some of the people there and I was stopped and it was racially profiled. I had actually a really interesting conversation with the police there because it's possible. I found out that was great that you can talk to them as opposed to, you know, if I was caught in a place like Egypt, I would not even be able to have a conversation. I said, I'm being racially profiled. And the second, like, no, we're not arresting you. And then I asked them, like, well, if you're not arresting me, can I have some ice cream? And then they were like, yes, you can have some ice cream. Of course, we're not arresting you. We're just collecting information. And then I got my friend was with me, also like a German Egyptian. And then she'd already had words with them in German and says, it's not your right to stop us. And then basically when she wanted an ice cream, she asked for two scoops and the police officer said, no, you can only get one scoop. And that I found was hilarious because, you know, it was control, but mostly we were targeted for how we looked because they were letting other people out. And me with my bike heading towards a park, I was not allowed to leave and I was just profiled. So in that sense, I wrote about it in a very comical way back then. But what I really wanted to say is that when you start having this idea of racially profiling people and taking away their rights, that will extend to a greater portion of society. And I think that whatever gains they have by clamping down on pro-Palestinian voices are things that will be used against the people in the future in different ways. And that is the real danger of really allowing that to be the discourse or the way that they are dealing with people. So in that incident, by the way, someone was filming them and because he was filming them, they got really violent and then kind of hurt him. But of course, you cannot hold them accountable, like I said.
So like something I've noticed since the Palestine protests, and it probably predates it, but you would know, you're living in Berlin, is that it just seems like a lot of the Arabs living in the West have really become disillusioned with the West in general, not just over this issue, but it's almost like this issue is opening their eyes to the sort of hypocrisy that people have been talking about for years, but it's very stark. And it's exactly what you're talking about, the way like lives of Palestinians are just not worth anything versus the lives of white people in any conflict. You mentioned Ukraine, but it could apply to anything. So how has your experience been with talking to other Egyptians or other Arabs in the diaspora and this general sense that like, fuck the West?
I was gonna be polite about it, but glad you said it. It is, fuck this whole framework, right? Like I just think that, you know, we know the language, we've gone through these frameworks, whatever it is, of NGOs, human rights, international law, humanitarian law, all of this. We fought for every right. And in the end, what did we actually get during that? We were tokenized. Always the, you know, the Arab representative, because they are so kind, always kind of bringing us in, tokenizing us. But in reality, the rules don't apply to them. These are the rules that we should follow. But they don't have to care about killing civilians. It's their right. They don't have to care about, you know, all of the rules they set out. But somehow they are the moral framework of what's right. It's just complete posturing. I think that, you know, not that I'm against any of the values preached there, right? Like, I do believe that people should have rights, and I really believe that, you know, people shouldn't be killed. But using their frameworks to say that this is where the moral high ground comes from, yeah, forget about it. I mean, I don't want to hear a single European tell me anything about equality and humanizing people, and I frankly don't want them to accept their criticism of Russia while they support Israel. Like, sure, I support Ukrainians personally, because no country should invade them and take over the land, but that's my principle. I find that I'm more principled than the people who are telling me all of these principles, because I'm acting based on that, not because they said so. Meanwhile, it's pretty ridiculous. Yeah, there's no coming back after what we've seen as the support of genocide and ethnic cleansing. You can't go back. You can't, all of these tweets about humanitarian aid while you're not stopping the killing, you cannot be seen as a good person. And I will not respect the frameworks or the values that you're preaching while you break them at will. So I think a lot of people feel that the same way. And the masks are off and we're back to, Fanon, really. Like, we have this idea of colonialism that is expressing itself. And, you know, Europol has all of these... all of this rhetoric is there, but I think I could give you an example of how things have changed between, for example, the war in Iraq and now the genocide in Gaza. George W. Bush, for all his ills, worked months and months convincing journalists, convincing the community that, Iraq had weapons of mass destruction before he went in, and we know it was completely... Yeah, but he worked for it, right? Biden goes out and says, I've seen evidence. And, you know, an explicit lie. He doesn't even wait. He doesn't even use his institutions to create a lie. I've seen evidence of decapitated babies, so horrible. Goes out and lies. And that is the basis of, a genocide. So it's not his, the laziness is insulting, to be honest. It's just, they don't even want to work for it as much as they did in the past. Look at that, and that's it.
Why do you think that is? Like, why don't they even have to try now to make up like interesting lies? Like, it's as if like all fucks are not. Sorry, I should stop cursing because we'll never get this online without like a bunch of like penalties or something. But why do you think they don't care anymore about constructing these elaborate stories or even trying to work to win people over. They're just kind of almost insulting everyone's intelligence who pays attention.
I think it's about repercussions and resistance. Like, if they, there is, like, there is nothing we can fight back with at the moment. If everyone's on board, they don't really need to sell something. They can do whatever they want. So at the moment, there is no resistance and need for an international community to convince an international community or people. I think we're already there where they can control everything just by doing it rather than convincing anyone. And, you know, it would be completely different if, you know, you're dealing with someone who can fight back, but they are really picking on Gaza. It's an open air prison that they're bombing with no one, no repercussions. And that's why we see this happening. Masks are off and no one can respond, especially with the, you know, the very weak state of the Arab world, and they're, you know, they don't care about this topic. It would be very different for a different topic where they need to overcome a kind of an international hurdle, but I think that's why.
Do you personally, or do you have friends living in Berlin or other European countries who feel like they'd rather now leave the West and, you know, move back? I have a friend who recently moved to France, and she was very, very happy about it. But then since the protests, since the violence started in Palestine, she's been reconsidering her decision and thinking of coming back. So what's the sentiment like, you know, between like among your friends, you know?
Yeah, but where would we go? Like, that's, we want to leave here, sure, but where would we go? It's like, we have no place. Whereas like most of the people in Berlin are already in exile, can't return to Egypt. So there is no real place to go to, even if you want to leave here and go back to Egypt. To what? To more repression, to more of the same. I think it's just difficult. And I think this main sentiment is like, the world doesn't really want us. You know, if you really care about humanity, then there's no place for us anywhere. And I think a lot of people are struggling with this, feeling so, you know, impotent, right? Not unable to do anything, and not able to, it's just like helplessness is and despair. I think that's the most feeling, rather than a positive, let's move to America kind of thing. There's no such thing. There's nowhere to move to. Berlin was a great destination for a lot of people in exile. It was great. Life was, there seemed to be a lot of freedoms. And you can organize, you could have a sense of community, it was relaxed. But with that gone, where do you go? I'm not sure.
Yeah, the sense of helplessness isn't just like about physical space. Even now on the internet, it seems like you're shouting in the dark, because oftentimes whatever platform you're on doesn't want to promote anything that's pro-Palestine. That to me is almost, it's a different type of frustration, but it's almost just as frustrating to know that you're basically cut off in some ways from just expressing your opinion virtually.
I think Palestine just makes it really obvious, but really, if we want to be, you know, honest, it's more or less anything anti-West, anti, you know, mainstream narrative. And you could really feel it during COVID as well. And I mean, that's at least, you know, from my point of view, I feel like it's a lot bigger than Palestine. It's a war against anything that doesn't serve the mainstream narrative. But Palestine, I think, just makes it really obvious.
That is very true. It's actually against, I would not see it just against the West, against power. Anything against power is being censored. I did this investigation in 2019 about Twitter, what they thought was the good Twitter, censoring Arab voices, mostly because Twitter was in the MENA region and basically wanted to clamp down on dissidents. And I kind of proved that they were censoring a lot of voices and deplatforming them. And what we have now, the most emblematic of the isolation that people feel, is the shadow ban, where people are think that they're reaching the world, but all of their stuff is only they can see. This is a kind of isolation, and it is a censoring of voices and algorithms that, you know, just don't put anything, you don't reach any of your friends or the people that you want to connect to just if you use the word Palestine or Gaza. I've seen the Instagram, for example, there was an algorithm that translates Palestine into Palestinian terrorist, and they've apologized for that. So we have this bias, and all of these, you know, digital countries, your citizenship is revoked at will based on their ideology. So it is very isolating, and there is no way you can get past it, because then we don't even have the echo chambers. They don't even allow us to talk to each other, and the narratives that they can decide are the narratives that eventually succeed. In some ways, it's been heartening to see, like, the protests that a lot of people showed up to. People were writing numbers of lawyers on their arms, just in case they were beaten, arrested, and they were given instructions to, you know, to make sure that they get legal help. Reminded me of the Egyptian protests and the fear that you go in. But against that, thousands of people came out. And that is a little heartening to see that so many people are going past all of the hasbara or like propaganda and being able to, to actually fight that and show up, you know.
Yeah, how are you staying sane?
I make music. That's how I stay sane. I play a lot of guitar. I've meet friends, go to these protests, take photos. It's, I don't know if it's working, but it's what I do. But finding people that feel the same way really, really helps. But I want to do a little bit more, write, express myself, all of that. It's not going to change anything, right? It's just how you take care of yourself. But we are at the moment, you know, it's always the thought is that we are witnessing ethnic cleansing and genocide. We know that it is that way, and there's nothing we can do. And that is really demoralizing. So, but in the grand scheme of things, I tell myself we're human animals. We shouldn't complain. That's where we are in the food chain. So maybe that helps a little bit.
That's all really sad, but it's interesting to hear your thoughts from Berlin. And I've seen a ton of people complaining about the situation, but it's nice to connect with someone who's there and just get a feeling of what it's like over there. So thanks. Is there anything else that you wanted to say or talk about from your experiences in the last few years there?
The only thing I want to maybe highlight is that a lot of people have followed the rules, used the frameworks, have become good, model, westernized citizens. And what's happening now is that they're realizing that no matter what they do, they won't fit in. And so the only thing I can say is that we don't need the West for values. We don't need them. We can have really good values on our own, and they don't have to subscribe to these models, because I'd rather just work on my values and have them genuine than to see the hypocrisy that we're presented with today. So I'm just probably a message to all of these people who want to fit in and want to say the right things. There is no right thing if you're the wrong color.
Yeah.
That's so true. Hang in there, Wael.
Yeah. It's fair. It's a good point, man. We don't need anyone else to tell us how to think. And I think that's kind of the message as well. Anyone upset with the media right now also takes away the same idea. I see a lot of people complaining about media coverage, and I kind of want to shout at them. This is just the latest example, but it's been like this for a long time. So I'm glad you're waking up now. And if anything, there's some silver lining in all of that, that people can see many of these institutions and systems for what they are and yeah. just decide that they can make meaning in their own way and find their own values, and they don't need to rely on whatever is your old paper that you used to get your news from to tell you how to think about the world. And it's a good time for us to start to decide what we think and what's actually going on. And yeah, so I couldn't agree more is what I'm really saying.
Hmm.
Thanks for giving me a chance to express all this. I think that is partly therapeutic and very, very much needed to kind of talk about this. And I mean, I think that there are so many people out there, and if we're not getting a voice by hearing it in the media, which probably we haven't for a long time, then at least we can find comfort in talking to each other and understanding that, you know, we're not alone there. I mean, it can be very, very isolating for people. It's like, am I crazy or are they? So finding these voices and making sure that we connect, I guess that's the only way that, you know, we can at least try our hardest despite all of this to maintain our humanity.
Thank you.
Of course, we're grateful for you and your story, and come back anytime. We're happy to be your therapy.
We're happy to be your therapy, and we hope to see you when you're in Cairo in real life.